Konnichiwa, Nihon Cricket Pod do yokoso. Yes, hello, it's the Japan Cricket Podcast back again after a bit of a break. It turns out going on a long-haul summer holiday with a one-year-old, only to come back and go straight into a World Cup trophy tour, followed by a JCL quarterfinals day and immediately into an eight-team Embassy Cup tournament last weekend, left very little room for podcasting. The trophy tour was good fun, though. We were hosted by the Australian Embassy, who even turned the cherished lawn into a cricket pitch for our appearance, as well as the Indian Embassy, who had to endure a short speech from me. Not sure I'll be invited back. A day in Sano with the supporters club up here, and lastly, a day at Kanda Myojin Shrine, where tons of people turned out to snap photos with the trophy, and hopefully got a lot of people enthused about the work being done by the JCA, and dreaming of one day getting hold of the trophy ourselves. On the field, there's been lots going on since the last pod. However, I'm not sure I've got the time or the energy to go through it all, so I'll wrap things up as quickly as I can. The main event has been the JCL T20, which started in August amidst a wave of enthusiasm, which was quickly dampened by an unseasonal thunderstorm, which wiped out almost the entirety of round one. Rounds 2 and 3 were much better, and in Group A, the Alpha Quashers defeated the Tokyo Rhinos and Sano CC to progress top of the group, while the Chiba Sharks were grateful to that washout against the Quashers after losing to Sano in Round 2. A big win for them against the Rhinos was enough to boost their net run rate ahead of Sano and join the Quashers in the quarterfinals. The standout game in the tournament, though, came in Group B, where Max CC posted 166 for 3, with Super Navaratna scoring the competition's first 100. He made 108 from 51 balls, only to stand behind the stumps and watch as the Rising Stars chased the total down with 5 wickets and 9 balls to spare. That result, coupled with 2 washouts, meant that Max failed to get out of the group, while the Rising Stars went through along with the Tokyo Falcons, who defeated the Tokyo Tornadoes in the only other completed match in that group. The Men in Blue ended up topping Group C, thanks to being one of only two teams to play and win in Round 1, edging out the Tokyo Titans, who would bounce back strongly to defeat the Kawasaki Knight Riders team, who finished without a win, and an unlucky Wyverns in the final match of the round to reach the quarterfinals. Wyverns had in turn beaten the Men in Blue, but were left rueing the chance to play the bottom team, which could have seen three of the four teams finish on 8 points. In Group D, it was no surprise to see the Tigers go through unbeaten, but there was a surprise as Paddy Foley's took out the Tokyo Rangers. Along with MIB, the Rangers were the only other team to get out of Round 1 with a win, seeing off a hapless Serendip CC, but defeats to Tigers and then Paddy's in the final round meant that one of the pre-tournament favourites was out at the first hurdle, while Paddy's joined Tigers at the next stage. And they weren't done there. Quarterfinals day was run in partnership with Fancode, and viewers on the live stream were treated slash tortured by my commentary throughout the day. And what a day it was, with a minor earthquake giving me a bit of a shudder in the commentary box. Not that any of the players on the field actually noticed. As alluded to, the Paddy Foleys booked their place at finals day on October 1st by overcoming the Alpha Quashers in a low scoring match, successfully defending 120 for 9 to win by 8 runs. The Rising Stars are the other unfancied team to go marching into finals day, and they will be Paddy's opponents in the semi-final after a hard-earned win over the Men in Blue by 34 runs. On the other side of the draw in the live stream matches, the viewers were treated to two cracking games. Firstly, the Falcons got home against the Titans in dramatic fashion, successfully chasing a total of 156, with 5 balls to spare, having looked well and truly out of it for much of the contest. Meanwhile, the Chiba Sharks reminded everyone of their knockout pedigree as they rediscovered the form that made them runners-up in the Japan Cup last year, beating the much-fancied Tigers side by 4 wickets after keeping them to just 103 for 8. As I said, finals day will be on Saturday, the 1st of October. I believe all matches will be live streamed, although only one of the semi-finals and the final will have commentary. The Embassy Cup was also played last weekend, and in Group A, the Indian Embassy retained their title after defeating the Pakistan Embassy in a typically nervy final. Playing on the turf wickets provided a fresh challenge for these players and those in the JCL T20 quarterfinals, and perhaps explains some of the low scores over the last couple of weeks. The Sri Lanka Embassy won the third place playoff in Group A, defeating a Japan team that was shorn of a lot of players who were farmed out to other teams to ensure that the whole squad gets a game. And of course, with several players based overseas these days, it's not possible to field the strongest Japan 11 in domestic events such as this. The Australia and New Zealand team won Group B thanks to sterling efforts from regular on this pod, Dougal Bedingfield, and the next guest I have in Rayo Sakurano Thomas. Three wickets by my previous guest Robbie Deans in the match against the Nepal Embassy set them on their way, and then they swept aside the Bangladesh Embassy in Group B final on Sunday to earn their first piece of silverware since 2018. The Nepalese team would finish third thanks to a win over an international 11 thrown together at the last minute due to the withdrawal of the British Embassy team following the death of Her Royal Highness Queen Elizabeth II. Okay, I wasn't planning to cover much in this intro, but I seem to have been talking for a while. So it's time to cut to why you're all here, which is my chat with the new JSA High Performance Coordinator, Mr. Ardeen Luhode.
I'm joined today by the JCA's latest recruits. Very exciting. Our first Zimbabwean to come and join the Japan Cricket Association. Mr. Ardeen Luhode. We'll make sure I'm saying your last name right. Luhode? Luhodo?
Luhode.
Luhode.
Yeah, but it's a bit complicated because you have to split your tongue.
Yeah,
it's your name, mate. You're
in trouble already. We're 35 seconds into this podcast and you've really made a mess. Anyway, so Ardeen, but Dean, right?
Yeah.
Dean Dino. Cool. Okay, Dino. Well, why don't you tell us right at the start? We tend to go back to everyone's early life. Tell us where you're from, you know, where you were born, where you grew up, and what it was like.
Yeah, I was born in a town in Midlands province in Zimbabwe called Gweru. It's one of the coldest towns.
But how cold is it?
Technically, I was a baby. I didn't get it. All the hype I wasn't cold when I was born in Gweru.
I reckon African cold is different to like English cold.
That's true. Yeah. English cold is pretty special. Yeah, born in Gweru and eventually moved to the big lights in the capital city in Harare when mom moved jobs. And spent most of my childhood in Harare, in Chitungwiza, Zimbabwe I grew up in, did most of my primary school from there, and yeah, we moved away from Chitungwiza in 2002, from memory, then we moved to a completely different place called Dumbushama in Zimbabwe. Dumbushama, which means a big red rock. So there's a big, I'll call it a mountain or big rock in Dumbushama. And that's what the place is named after. And it is still a family home till now. And if I'm going to go back home, that's where I'll be going to see family, hopefully soon. So yeah, challenges. Pretty typical African childhood. Lots of friends, playing soccer mainly out in the street, and just sitting and talking. And yeah, it was very memorable. Most of my friends back in that day, I don't even talk to most of them.
Yeah, that's the same for most of us.
So a lot has changed, but I'm pretty grateful for that part of my life.
Yeah. So you said you moved because of your mum's job. So what did your parents do?
Yeah. I always tell people that I'm probably the dumbest person in the family. she went straight out of university and became a teacher, but she has since moved away from that. And she's now a social scientist and a university lecturer. And she seems to enjoy education and research, and she's a pretty patient woman, so she's pretty good with teaching people. And my dad is an agronomist, so that's what he studied at university, worked for the government for a while, then worked for a private entity for a while as well, just crop and animal science, teaching people how to grow their own food, that sort of thing. Which is pretty big in Africa, where there are obviously sustainability issues when it comes to feed and water sanitation. So it's a big thing back home.
Yeah. So you're clearly in a family of educators, and now that's the path you're going down as well.
Yeah.
Come to it in a bit, but you spend a fair bit of time in schools. And have you got brothers and sisters as well?
Yeah, there's a fight, but yeah, difference between us. I've got one sister, she's the youngest in the family. Then I've got a brother who's right in the middle, is actually at a university at the moment. He's studying biomedical engineering.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's pretty switched on. And my sister is still in high school. She's done with high school in a couple of years. Yeah, so yeah, they're still all back in Zimbabwe. Seem to be enjoying the time at the moment, like with regards to school. Like many kids, they've got big dreams, big ambitions, and it's exciting to always catch up and talk to them.
You speak to them pretty regularly.
Yeah, I try to speak them to every week sort of thing. But yeah, it's because the internet is obviously the background, it's pretty difficult, connection expensive.
Yeah.
So it's pretty limited from their end. But whenever I can, I try to always touch base, see how everyone is going.
When were you last there? When did you last see them?
I last went back to Zimbabwe. I left beginning of 2018, so January 2018.
Yeah, so it's been 4.5 years.
Yeah, so it's been 4.5 years. That's why my mom is cracking the whip a bit.
It's good, yeah. Well, I mean, I imagine you've grown up a bit in that time, and we'll come on to that. So talk us a little bit about what school was like growing up in Zimbabwe. Most of the listeners, I presume, will know very little.
Yeah.
The education system and what life is like over there. So can you paint a bit of a picture for us?
Well, I started from this standpoint, like education in Africa is obviously a big thing.
Yeah.
And there's a massive belief of you're not educated, you won't amount to anything. So that's why sort of parents push you down the pathway and try to get all their kids educated. So school was pretty laid out. I'd say it's pretty similar to here, where education is really important. You have to go to school. Structure of school is pretty similar. We used to spend most of the time studying. Parents would invest in extra lessons before exams, so make sure you pass your exams. But yeah, everything was presented in English, and Zimbabwe is an English colony, so most people back home can speak English. But school is quite enjoyable, very structured. I would say a very traditional way of teaching to what I've been exposed to now after school. Like the Western part of the world, it's totally different. Limited resources as well. I remember back in school, we used to share one textbook between 8 kids. So yeah, we used to share textbooks. We used to do note writing. The teacher would write on the board from a textbook, because we all didn't have textbooks. We'd copy on a little notepad. So it was hard work, like lack of resources, but lucky enough, teachers were pretty creative. To explain that, Zimbabwe is one of the most literate countries in Africa. So our education system was pretty good. I'm not too sure it's up there until as of now, but most judging by people in Zimbabwe, how they go on to do well around the world, how they're sought after in the working world is a pretty positive thing about our education system and how things up around me.
Yeah, you mentioned the English run school, but English isn't your native language, right?
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you grew up speaking and how you came to learn English?
Well, obviously back in school, the subjects were presented in English, and my native language is obviously Shona. One of the biggest languages in Zimbabwe. And as soon as you left school, you go back to your Shona, and that's how you sort of conveys with everyone. So coming from my background, it is mainly Shona, then I'll probably use a lot of English at school. But that sort of evolved once I got to high school. I went to the best state school in the country. So my first year there, I met kids from all walks of life who have gone to private schools, who just come from totally different background and could speak English. I saw it as a very posh environment for me because everyone behaved differently, used English. And the mode of communication around the school was mainly English. And continuing my interest in cricket as well, as cricket is mainly an English sport, and I used to play against people who just spoke English. And it all changed for me. Like one day when I played cricket for my state provincial team, I was only under 40, and I could write English pretty proficiently, but I couldn't really speak it properly. I was a bit shy and some broken English, that sort of thing. And I was batting with a white guy from a school called St. George's. And we were batting, and in between overs, I couldn't say it. We literally were just clapping and like just look at each other and just like, it's fine, right? It's fine. So that annoyed me. And when I went to home that night, I'm like, I have to do something about this. And that's when I started investing a lot of time into me speaking English. And that's where it all began.
Well, let's see, 13 years later, and maybe you'll have the same experience in Japan. Japanese guy, you'd be like, oh, that's no good.
They'll probably happen soon, I think.
So you mentioned your cricket experiences there and playing sort of regional level. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your earliest memories of cricket, how you found out about the sport, and how you went through the pathway in Zimbabwe, what that looks like.
Yeah, well, initially when I was in primary school, I just used to play a lot of soccer. And as you know, soccer is like cheap sport. That's, everyone plays soccer nowadays, and it's probably the main sport. So around when I was probably just before I left primary school, because mom was always moving jobs, I went to a government school, and there was cricket there. I used to just play a day here and there, probably 2 days a year, and that sort of thing. And when I left that school and started high school, I saw that cricket was at my new high school. And just on assembly one day in the morning, they were just picking teams for the weekend. And on the soccer side, they were like 80 people. On the cricket side, they were like, oh, 20 people. Then I was like, oh, I'll probably just
do what the game.
Yeah, I'm a cricket over here. And yeah, that's how I initially started playing. And yeah, I just found out I was pretty good at it, made good friends. Then I just decided to start playing cricket. And that was the end of my soccer career, unfortunately.
And I'm curious. So in Zimbabwe, is cricket seen as a bit of a posh sort of rich person sport because of the barriers that exist through equipment and cost of playing it? I mean, this is a big topic in England at the moment about, you know, the primary school system is the one that produces all the cricketers and no one else gets to go. Is that similar sort of obstacle?
Yeah, I would say there's similar obstacles in the sense of it's obviously a very expensive sport to play. And for parents to invest in your development is really difficult. And that's one of the obstacles I face as well. But fortunately, my parents did all they can to sort of help me out that way. And there was a point as well when Zimbabwe cricket were investing in state-identified state government schools to invest in the young kids playing cricket and providing equipment and support scholarship. So things improved during that period, but I'm not too sure that is happening at the moment. And that is sort of stunted our growth as a cricket nation. With regards to playing numbers, it has gone on to affect the pathway and just the general standard of on cricket at the moment. So I guess it was a big factor in taking up a game and me continuing playing. Built some of the challenges I faced, but going to one of the probably the biggest state school in the country really helped, because there were resources there, and it was one of the identified schools, and we got quite a lot of support from Zimbabwe Cricket, and the school supported us immensely. So sort of worked out well in the long run.
Yeah. So how does the pathway look? I mean, did you end up getting talent ID'd yourself and playing in sort of age group levels? So what does that look like?
Yeah. Well, my first year of cricket, I managed to go for the state and Zimbabwe trials. So what usually happens is you play a cricket season for, let's say, 10 games.
And what format are you playing, sir?
Oh, we're playing 50-over cricket. Yeah. In Zimbabwe, schools cricket is 50-over cricket. They usually play a couple of T20 tournaments around the country, which are pretty good, because you get to play a lot of games. So usually you play a season of cricket at school. You collect all your statistics, and usually the selectors go through all the school to see who's scoring runs, who's not. Then you get picked for the state team, and then you go away and play the state state tournament for your province. Then if you do all the get picked for Zimbabwe trials, and if you're good enough, you make it for Zimbabwe under 14 teams, under 16. Under 18, and all the way up. So I did play for my state team, which is Mashonaland. I played at under 14 level, under 16, under 17, and under 19 level. And I played for Zimbabwe under 16 level, under 18, and under 19, which usually meant touring South Africa and playing against state teams in South Africa, usually, which is always enjoyable. And a lot of kids wanted to go on tour.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty good experience.
I mean, despite the issues that Zimbabwe has had on and off the cricket field, they've still managed to maintain a relatively strong side. I mean, they're not as strong as they were when I was growing up in the 90s, obviously. But, you know, even we've been watching them recently in the qualifier, and it's ended up comfortably the strongest of the other associate teams.
Yeah.
So even though there are issues within Zimbabwe cricket and the country as a whole, it does still seem to have positives and still seems to be producing cricketers. Do you think that's more in spite of the governance of the sport rather than because of it? Or is it the systems that have been put in place a long time ago continue to serve a purpose?
Yeah, I think the system still in place are doing a decent job, but looking at where Zimbabwe cricket is and who they're competing with, the cricket world has evolved and
everyone else got better.
Yeah, everyone has just gotten better, and we need to get better and evolve as well. And I think that's where we sort of miss the point. Talent is always there, as you have mentioned. There is a lot of talent back on. But talent seems to just leave and go somewhere else. Mm. So, which is quite unfortunate, but
there's a living example of that. It's the opposite, mate.
Yeah, but talent there, there's passion for the sport. I was watching the game last night. Stample full, people were supporting the game. Players are playing more, they're doing the best they can. There's so much potential there, and which can be done, and we can go back to where we used to be before. It's just a matter of doing the right things and just looking what everyone is doing, what we could do better to tailor something which is suitable for the Zimbabwean climate, so we can move forward.
Mm. So go on then. Why did you leave?
Oh, me leaving?
You should probably tell me. You went to Australia first. What did you go to England for?
I went to the UK first.
Scotland.
Yeah. Funny enough, my journey started at school. When I was at school, I got picked to go on the school's exchange program in the UK. I was only 17 then, 16, 17. So exchange program entailed two decent cricketers from the school Gotye is who in the UK, every year you go spend the cricket season there. You play school's cricket for the school and you play top cricket for the local club.
Where was that?
It was in Oxford Street, Birmingham, Shropshire.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was at Oxford Street School and I was playing for Oxford Street Cricket Club. So I missed about 7 to 8 months of school.
Just playing cricket.
Just playing cricket. That was my first time going on an airplane. Well, I landed at Heathrow in my school uniform. And the guy who was supposed to pick me up was late. So I was just standing there in my school uniform, very confused and cold. Yeah, going back to me living. Obviously, after I went to the UK, I finished high school. Toured South Africa with Zimbabwe under 19. Then I went to a cricket academy, South Africa for a year. And after that, I went back to the UK, played the season of club cricket. Yeah. And my thinking was, oh, I'm set now. I'm going to go back around and give playing professional cricket a good show. Now my development is pretty good. I might get an opportunity to play. But so usually in Zimbabwe, state cricket, you just go on trials, like a trial for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You train for a few weeks before the season, and there are no real guarantees or we're going to do this for you. This is what we're going to do with you. No one really, you don't have those conversations. And I trained for a few weeks and just a few weeks before the start of the season, I was like, I don't think I'm getting a day here. And if I'm going to play for this team, I'm going to be 300 Ks away from home.
Yeah.
And you have to use your own resources to go to training, to find accommodation somewhere. And I played club cricket in the UK and I'd saved quite a bit of money. Like, I might use all my resources and not get a day. Yeah.
Mm.
I'll rent a day. What should I do? Then wise words from mom was go to South Africa and get an education. So I went back to South Africa and I did a higher certificate in sports coaching sciences for a year. And at the end of 2017, Australia called. And that's how I eventually left Zimbabwe.
Yeah, okay. We'll come back to that, but just tell us a little bit about what Dino the cricketer is like. What do you do? What are your skill sets?
Well, as a cricketer, I'm batting all around and ball a bit off, some tighter fops. I like to bat in the top one up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like facing the new ball.
Yeah.
Off spin, just a bit of trickery. Pretty chill, just making the better thing, make a mistake. But yeah, I quite enjoy the game and I enjoy playing long version cricket, unfortunately. I like Red Bull cricket, bowling, batting Red Bull cricket, and even just fielding. The demands of long version cricket it's not easy.
It's different.
It's just different. The demands on your body, mentally, your skill set is just, I think it's just the pinnacle of the game.
Yeah, it's good to have that to aspire to, isn't it? And what about the waves from cricket? What else are your interests?
Away from cricket, a real sports junkie, unfortunately.
Nothing unfortunate.
Yeah. I like any bit of sport on TV. I like podcasts too. I like reading some books. I've got a few books I have to catch up on. I like reading. Any outdoor stuff as well, camping, running. I just like new experiences because, you know, when you're working and when you're passionate about something, it's always good to put it aside and go out and experience something different. And through that, you get to meet new people as well. That's the interest of mine, meeting new people from different walks of life, talk about something different, their life, their experiences, what they like, what their ambitions are and their opinion on things around the world.
Right. But the whole new country full of people to meet.
Yeah.
Get to know. Okay. So going back to your professional background then. So you went to Australia next You played a bit of club cricket and you were working in schools as well.
So. Yeah. So most in Australia playing club cricket, and I was involved in a lot of coaching and educational stuff on my side. So which entailed working in schools in different capacities. I worked as a boarding assistant in New South Wales. So just being in charge of the boarding house, making sure kids are reading, doing the right thing at the right time, make sure
not running wild.
Yeah. Everyone eats, everyone is healthy, everyone is in the right frame of mind. It's you actually just trying to avail a good homely kind of environment for the kids. So I really enjoy that. I got to form good relationship with kids. Have a good understanding of how kids think. And yeah, it has sort of complemented my development in coaching, and yeah, it sort of complements where I want to end up as well in the near future, with regards to education, education of cricket coaches, education of people around the game, which is an interest of mine. So, yeah.
It's your parents' influence rubbing off, I reckon.
Yeah.
So then you've come to Japan as the high performance coordinator and the women's and academy head coach. You haven't been there long, so I won't ask you too much about the job itself or what it entails. But you arrived, well, at the time of recording, you've been here, what, I guess a month now?
What? Yeah.
Yeah. So just tell us a little bit about what your first impressions are having arrived and what your feelings about Japan cricket are and the role so far.
First impressions, from a general perspective, is a beautiful country, lovely people. And I'd say, people very keen to learn. And it was really good to get off the plane and get to meet some of the people I'm going to be working with, which has been really good. I guess from a cricket standpoint, the players are very coachable, but it's just a matter of making them understand why are we doing something, how do we do something, and just trying to make the people think more about cricket and just try develop a cricket culture out on cricket culture and the template from other countries, just our own of way of doing things, which is part of my role to develop our own way of training, our own way of playing.
Yeah, find out what suits.
Yeah, what suits our playing
in developing psyche.
Yes.
Strengths, figure out our own strengths rather than, templates from other countries. That's what we've been doing for years, trying to get things the Australian way or the English way or whatever. But actually,
we can take the best bit of it anyway.
Yeah.
Yes, and I guess from takeaway from what you just said is having been involved with the players now, you quickly start to realize that everyone is unique. They have their own unique way of learning. Mm. Like coaching in Australia, most of the kids or the athletes you'll be involved with have grown up in a country which is crazy about cricket. The cricket culture is there.
And cricket's very visible as well.
Cricket's very visible. And if you're going to point to someone, there are not a lot of times you talk about technique or anything of that sort. It's all about approach to different scenarios, mental execution. But here you actually have to coach. You talk about technique. You are coaching the whole athlete, the whole
form. They don't call it form.
Form.
It's not like correct bowling form.
Yeah, that's true. So you're coaching technique, you coach approach, mental, just trying to give the athlete the full picture of what the game entails. It's the different pieces which have to work together for you to achieve this. Mm. And so that's where eventually we would want to get as a program, obviously, to have athletes who are aware of what the game entails, different parts of the game. And hopefully we can do better in different spheres of the game here in Japan. But as far as my role is concerned, with regards to pathways to the high performance programs, the template is there. There are a lot of things which have been done, which the right things have been done. It's just a matter of pushing that in a way where we start to go to the next level.
Yeah, get them done properly.
And
not, for the last however long it's been, those aspects of high performance haven't really been anyone's dedicated job. And so, whoever it is always trying to fit it in around something else. Whereas having you here to coordinate those things and ultimately hopefully lead them, same with anything, when someone's fully focused on it, they're more likely to be successful. So you're going to be working as head coach of the women's team. You've had a couple of sessions with them already. What's your experience coaching females? Because generally it does require a slight different approach from people I've spoken to. So what are your thoughts around that and what experience have you had?
Yeah, that's true. It does require a different approach. Obviously, when I started my cricket education back in 2015, 2016, I spent quite a bit of time in South Africa, but every time I would go, I was involved with the Zimbabwe women's national team. I used to just volunteer to just go and throw balls to them. Yeah, that was my first experience of coaching women and coming to a realization of, oh, it's a different environment. It's a unique environment. Things are done differently. Female athletes respond differently. And managed to be involved with a few women's sides in Queensland. I coached a couple of women's sides there, club side and representative side. Then just recently when I was in Adelaide, I was involved with the school's cricket team and the few girls in that cricket team all played state cricket for South Australia. I used to do some private coaching as well. I was involved with girls. Just got an opportunity with Adelaide Strikers now for this coming season. So I actually like coaching ladies because they're very coachable. I always absorb the information, which can be bad at times. But it's definitely one attribute you need this year, athlete, and if you'd want to improve, is being coachable, respond, and just taking in the information as you go. But yeah, coaching women is a passion of mine, and the ladies we have now seem to love the game. Different age groups, a younger cohort, and more experienced players involved, which is always a good thing going forward. And yeah, hopefully with a lot of cricket coming up in the near future, hopefully we get the girls ready and they improve not only as players per se, but as advocates for women's cricket in Japan, which is one area we're looking to really improve. The women becoming select bearers of women's female sport in Japan would be a very good thing for us and definitely complement what we're trying to do as an organization. And
All the way. There's so many opportunities for female cricketers around the world at the moment, and it'd be great to get more Japanese players involved. Are there any challenges that you anticipate? I mean, the obvious one is the language barrier, but is there anything else that you've seen in your early exchange that you think, how am I going to change that?
Yeah, there have been a couple. I think I'd say for starters, it's probably just the fear of making mistakes and being perfect.
Yeah, everyone wants to be perfect at the time.
Yeah, I think to make mistakes for you to learn, and that's one thing we can improve on, to just allow the girls to understand that making mistakes is fine. You don't need to be perfect to make 100. You're probably going to be perfect 60% not of the time. You need a bit of light anyway. So getting the girls to a point where they understand that you don't need to be perfect and you're allowed to make mistakes will be a good starting point. And obviously trying to make the girls realize that there's a real good opportunity here. Mm. If you just put your head down and put a lot of effort in, you could see yourself anywhere around the world.
Yeah.
Just to make them realize it's actually a nice long opportunity for them to be with it, whenever they want to be, is would be another challenge as well, because this one area we're struggling with, girls just think, no, I'm playing, I'm just going to play cricket and stay in Japan.
Mm.
There's no real ambition of, oh, I could play cricket here in Japan and go to Fairbreak and probably go to the big batch or go away.
Yeah, and then some of the younger girls, they seem to think that it's unattainable for them.
Yeah.
Even though someone in Japan has just done
it. Done it, yeah.
They still see that as too far for them. That's the mindset shift.
Yeah, so it's a couple of days ago to sort of keep with the girl, which would be a good
step forward.
Yeah, good step forward.
And have you identified any potential quick wins, any little things that you could do to accelerate learning and either with the females or with the junior academy group?
Yeah, I reckon a quick win from my end would be just creating an availing a good learning environment. Truly try to create a good culture going. Just a good culture going, try to start having a conversation would be a good starting point. At the moment, I'm still starting getting to know the girls.
Getting to know everyone, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people, a lot of names.
Yeah. So getting to know the girls better, starting to have those conversations will be and conversations, relationships. Then from there, you can sort of have an influence on someone. I think that'll be a good win for me to, for the girls to start trusting me and my ideas. We are on the same page with regards to what we want to do and where we want to go will be the small wins for me. But the world is the limit for the ladies at the moment. There's so many opportunities out there, as we mentioned. And JCA is doing a great job to support the girls and give them an opportunity. It's just a matter of taking it.
Yeah. So you sound pretty optimistic about what the future has here. How have you found the moves? How have you found, coming to Japan and settling in? Obviously, you're riding your bike to the ground, which is, 30 minutes each way, so it's keeping you fit. The early obstacles of going to the supermarket, things like that. The cricket can take care of itself in some respects, right? Because you know that. When you're out in the field, you're in your comfort zone. But how are you finding...
Yeah, just more. The move, as you know, it was complicated. But fortunately, since settled in now, still having a bit of difficulty with a few things with regards to my Wi-Fi, as I told you. It's still a month in, and I can't really communicate or work from home, which is would make my life easier. But the move has been good. Thanks for your support and enabling support, which has been really good. But it's a very nice place to stay. I like the Japanese way of life. It's not a fast life. It's, you see it as it comes, very slow. It's lined up with more time since I got here through the day, because everything is so slow, mellow.
That's very sun, I like.
So
how did you actually find out about Japan cricket?
Japan cricket? I've always been very curious about cricket in other countries. So looking at associate countries, I'll look at Japan, I'll look at Cyprus, all the cricket nations to see how they're doing. Obviously, the push from the ICC has been pretty good, to get cricket everywhere, to sort of invest in the cricket countries who are still developing. And that sort of helped to sort of get me asking myself a question this would be a good opportunity to go somewhere and start something with an organization. And that's sort of how I got onto Japan cricket. And I initially sent an email to you years ago now. I kept on following Japan cricket. The socials are really good, I told you. And I just noted a lot of good things going there. Under 19 to the World Cup was very interesting. my mates in Australia were actually just talking to me the other day. They're like, can you please send me the Japanese under 19 jersey?
I didn't got some.
Yeah. So that stirred a lot of interest and got me curious. And that,
I've just found the first email you sent me.
Yeah.
25th of October, 2019.
Yeah.
Dear sir, greetings. I have a Zoom finds you well. I was wondering if I could please ask you something. Many thanks.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, Dean, what would you like to ask?
Yeah.
And so it begins. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, 2019. Before it all started, my interest. And I always looked at Japan as... I really would like to get involved there one day. I'm grateful it has happened and I'm here and I'm really enjoying.
Yeah, you're quite a good example. We get these kind of emails quite a lot. The ones you sent, you sent them, followed up, you're talking about your coaching certificates and what you've been doing. And I went back to you and said, look, we don't have anything at the moment. But then I forwarded on your email to Alex Miyagi, and said that you might be someone worth considering. And then you applied for the role back in a few months later.
Yeah.
And I sent you an email along with a few other people about the job advert that we had going for the high performance manager, which ultimately went to Mark Coles, but that was... He ended up not arriving because of the pandemic.
Oh.
The pandemic just kind of accelerated. And then Simon Dart took over. And then on his departure, you applied again. And that's how you've got him. So, yeah, but it's good. So it's a quite a long story. We interviewed you back in 2020, right?
And, yes.
And very much had you on our list. So it's good persistence. You were 24 at that time and you were just a bit young.
Yeah.
27, you've got more experience, you've built your coaching CV, and that's hopefully set you up better for the role now.
Yep.
Okay, so now that you're here, I mean, I guess you said you've been following it, but what were your expectations of what cricket would be like? And now, I mean, you played your first club game on the weekends. I know it was still early days, but is what you're seeing matching up to the expectations you had, or is it better or worse?
It's probably better. I never expected the cricket fraternity here to be this big. There are actually a lot of people who are playing cricket at the ball. There are actually a lot of junior players in the pathway, which is something I never expected and envisioned. Looking at other countries, on our level at the moment, I don't think they would have as many people playing, and especially as many juniors playing. So we probably needed in a few sectors there, which is really promising going forward. Yeah, but in saying that, what I anticipated was exactly this, if not better. There are a lot of people involved, there are a lot of people playing. There's a lot of structure with regards to how things are being run, which is the ambition to, from us as an organization, to try and get better, to try and get do better for the Japanese cricketers, a better, more conducive environment for them to grow, develop, and eventually become the flag bearers of cricket in Japan has been just a big thing for me, which I never really saw from back then.
Mm.
But being on the ground, first-hand information, seeing things happen, being involved with people, starting to have conversation with people, and obviously playing that on this past weekend was a really fun experience and very enjoyable, playing with people from all different walks of life. We're playing a team with some people from Pakistan, India. My team had
a
Japanese guy from New Zealand.
So I
don't think you get a lot of that too. Other places in the world or do that.
Yeah, for sure. Lastly, on the work you're doing, you're also coaching the Sanlo Braves team of under 15s and under 19s. How's that go?
Oh, yeah.
What's the talent looking like?
Really good. Really good. A lot of enthusiasm with the group I'm involved in. There's also one girl in the team as I did tell you, she watched the concert training every week, and she's a real talent, and she seems pretty enthusiastic about the game, not deterred by the boy she's playing with, which is pretty good for me. And but the team is pretty good, different age groups, different abilities, but they seem to have a great understanding of each other. And it's been 3-4 weeks now with them, and I'm starting to form relationships now where I can have a bit of a laugh with them.
Yeah, good.
And
you're off to Fuji in what, 10 days or so?
Yeah.
Actually, finally get to see some matches, get to see them in action, right?
Yeah. So that has been really good. I guess as a coach, when you start with a new team, everyone is just a bit, you know, nervous.
And wary.
And, yeah. Look at each other, right? Now I get them having a laugh. We're competing against each other now in training.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, which is really good. And this taking on board some of the ideas I have, and we're agreeing on a few things, which is really good. Obviously, as I mentioned to them, we're probably the only club which gets to train all the year.
Yeah.
We have all the facilities, all the access to get us better as a team. Yeah.
There's something Rayo brought up as well.
It's, yeah.
I want to sound agreed that with the envy of every other club.
Yeah, and this is sort of...
It's got everything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sort of the discussion I had with the team. Like, we need to lean to it, everything we do.
Right.
The other day, I was just having a look when the first played, just sitting out in the shades, no warm up there. 5 minutes before the game, everyone is aligned, kicking. I'm like, I'll probably have to start doing more.
Yeah.
Yeah, take the lead. Let's be the first club which has a proper warm-up. Guys go out and ball, guys go out and...
Yeah, shouldn't be hard.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a good starting point. And everyone agreed when we had the discussion. So, hopefully, guys implement that going forward. When we get to Fiji, hopefully, we're a good outfit. We're ready to compete and learn and, yeah, have a good time.
Great. Cool. Well, it's been good. I always finish each of these podcasts with a couple of sets of questions. Now, the Japan-specific questions might be a bit early for you, but we can still do the cricket ones. So start there. I want you to tell me the best player you've ever played with or against.
Best player I've played with is probably the current South African opening batsman, Aiden Markram.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he can play. What's the best thing you've ever learned from a coach?
Best thing I ever learned from a coach was from a guy called Alden Smith. He's now coaching in New Zealand, Central Districts. He said, the game was united.
Yeah, you gotta learn it. Favorite shot? You're a batter?
Sweep shot.
Sweep? don't see enough sweeping in Japan. First thought after being dismissed?
Why am I playing this game?
That's another day I've given up. Career highlight.
Career highlight is probably playing in South Africa for the Zimbabwe under 19 and realizing if I'm ever going to make it as a professional cricketer, there is serious talent.
Yeah, it's cool. Any loss? Any one match that stands out that still really annoys you?
Probably in Scotland. I was playing for the Village Club, and we're the poorest club of the competition, and we were about to get relegated. And we lost a game. We should have won against our lonely counterpart. A game we should have won, and no one was happy. Even now, wicket keeper was a postman. He even had to come to the ground with a few letters in his car.
Yeah, cricket into both the world brings up some funny stories.
Yeah.
Any particularly funny stories from a game that you can recall?
Oh, funny stories from a game is probably, it won't be from a game. It's in Scotland. Gone in Scotland, first game of the season, snowed on Friday. Snow Thursday, snow Friday. We tried to get the snow off the field on Friday. Snow water off the pitch Saturday morning. And we still managed to play a day. And I don't know how we pulled it off. They considered it not.
Yeah, coming from Africa, but I was a bit of a shock. Favorite format to play and to watch?
Favorite format to play, two-day cricket, favorite format to watch.
Test
cricket. Ideally, a Boxing Day test match. So.
I was going to stop asking this question. It's always the same. Okay, is there one innings or bowling performance played by someone else that you wish you could have played yourself?
There was a guy I played against last season. That was all. Players at Western Australia Premier Kong. He made 158 off in the batting 2 day cricket. No chance.
Really?
Gun better has played a few games for South Australia. Real talent. And I would have loved to open the bat like that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, look, mate, it's great having you on, and hopefully, you know, start of a long spell in Japan cricket for you. I'm sure there's lots of people out there still waiting to get to know you. I'm not sure when I'll put this podcast out, probably be in another month or so, but hopefully you'll be a bit more suddenly with a met a few more people. And yeah, to everyone out there who does listen to this, when you see Dino, make sure you go and say hello.
Cheers. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. Appreciate it.
Pleasure, mate. Speak to you again soon.
Easy.
That concludes the 11th episode of this season, and there's still a way to go. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I have Rayo Sakalano Thomas coming on next time, and then we will be going into a busy international season. Make sure you keep across all the JCA socials, as we have lots of content coming your way. Fixture and squad announcements, a pre-tournament series, which will be Japan men's first internationals in more than 1,400 days, as well as previews and intros to all of the players. The snazzily named 2024 T20 World Cup East Asia Pacific Sub-Regional Qualifier B will start in Sano on Saturday the 15th of October, and we really do want to see as many people coming to the support team as possible. So get yourself up here, enjoy the fun. There'll be a big festival happening on Sunday the 16th all day long, and I can confirm that Japan will be playing in the afternoon on that day, so if there was ever a time to visit Sano, this is it. Thanks as always to BRB Munday for the background music, and to all of you for staying with me until the very end. Give the show a review if you have the energy to use your thumbs a little bit. If not, just click on 5 stars and we can all be happy. Until next time, arigato gozaimashita.